Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton and our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, for an episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And I stumbled on Ryan's name because Ryan has the news of the weekend. Ryan, what happened on Sunday that everybody should know about?
Well, Sunday I was having breakfast at the Ritz-Carlton Buckhead, compliments of First Data, as I was about to head out to Eastlake for the Sunday. And right beside me, waiting for his car, was Rory McIlroy. And I didn't know, at the time he was going to go on and have such a great day, but I said, hey, can I get a picture with you? And he took a selfie with me, felt really good. And I put it out on Twitter, and FedEx responded to me. Twitter, FedEx said, hey, we love your picture, great picture. We'd like to send you a special surprise. Direct message us for more information. So I sent them a direct message, and then I filled out a form, and something's on its way. I don't know what it is.
Exciting. The producer's living Red Hawk life.
Red Hawk life. Hashtag no Red Hawk life.
So is that the picture that we're going to publish with today's show?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, I will tweet it out later on Atlanta Business Radio so our listeners can see.
And Photoshop me in there.
Okay.
There you go. Well, just for kicks, let's actually do talk to our guest today.
You got it.
Now, this is going to be a fantastic show. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the Chief Customer Officer of Pipestream, coming back to the Business Radio X studio, Miss Donna Peoples. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Managing Partner, Strategic Marketing and Sales Enablement for Ascension. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Craig Apatoff. How are you, man?
Thank you. Great to be here.
Can you share a little bit about Ascension? What are you guys doing for folks?
So we are a management consulting firm, and we're totally focused on growth, helping companies grow. Growth meaning revenue growth, market share improvements, business expansion geographically, and sometimes growth through new products. So we're all about top-line growth. We're not a cost-cutting firm. We're not a process improvement firm. Companies that are looking to grow typically are looking for help.
Now, do you find that companies appreciate that kind of type of thinking rather than, you know, let's cut and save and things like that? You're focused on let's make more money and solve problems by selling some stuff.
Companies typically want to do both, but our experience is either you grow or you perish in today's market. So we've got a lot of folks out there who are constantly saying, how am I going to make next year's numbers? Investors, shareholders are typically looking for growth. And the only way to get there is to be smart, strategic, and to be one step ahead of your competition.
Now, when you get into a firm and you're starting out, what are some of the questions you ask them in order to figure out what's the best strategy to move forward?
Well, our approach is something we call AIMS, A-I-M-S. It stands for Analytics, Insights, Marketing, and Sales Enablement. And in the analytics piece, that's really the financial dimensions of business growth. And what we find in about 70 to 80% of companies is they don't really know where they're making their money. Many times, the majority of customers could be unprofitable. They haven't taken the time to segment their market. They haven't taken the time to really look at where growth and value are generated. So we do a lot of financial analysis. And the other thing we do is we sort of ask questions around where are the gaps, where are the opportunities, where are the unmet needs in the market? What is your competition not doing well? And most importantly, what are the needs and wants of your customers that can be fulfilled by your company? So it's really those two areas, sort of looking at the financial dimensions and then looking at the needs and wants and differentiators versus their competition to identify those gaps that a company can exploit for growth.
Now, do you find that sometimes, because I'm operating under the impression that you're often visiting with more than one executive at a time early in the engagement cycle, do you find that sometimes there are team members that maybe are not all that excited about growth, maybe even a little bit scared about growth and don't initially embrace this whole
accountability is kind of scary.
Absolutely. Accountability is a magic word. There are in every organization, they're what we call the doctor knows.
They're doctors?
They're people, I like it.
People who only know how to say no and manage budgets. But the folks that we typically deal with are the C-level executives, presidents, general managers, CEOs, whose jobs depend on growth. They can't afford to stand on circumstance. They can't afford to preserve structures that don't work. They can't afford to preserve budgets that don't work. If they need to reallocate money, if they need to restructure, if they need to look at some different strategies to drive growth, they're forced to do that. So we tend to work with C-level executives, and then many times we'll be passed on to the mid-level managers to execute programs. So our firm's a little different in that we do both the strategy and we help execute some of these programs to bring them to market.
So when you say help execute, how does that work?
So I'll give you an example of a strategic alliance situation. We worked with a company recently. We're working with a company for the last several years to transform them from sort of a face-to-face. They're a financial services firm, and they've sold face-to-face. And we've developed, working with them, a new online remote model, meaning customers work with them totally by phone and by internet. And the products they're selling are more than just one product. Now they're selling 5 and 6 products. And the product mix is all third-party alliance partnerships. So none of the, with the exception of the original product, the other 5 we've surrounded and built on the platform are coming from third-party strategic partners who are basically delighted to have a new channel to market.
And now that company is selling items that they're not, they're just kind of middlemaning?
Exactly. They're a brand. They're a brand, and they're a frontline, what we call tier one customer support. And they've got a negotiated revenue share with every partner in the mix. But to answer your question, I left it out around execution. We not only helped them develop the model and the financials to support the business, we went out and helped them find the partnerships, negotiate the alliances, and now we're integrating the partnerships now. So it's a hands-on approach. It could take, you know, a good strategic alliance, one of them can take 6 to 9 months to put in place. In this case, we had 5 simultaneously, so it was a pretty busy executional challenge.
Well, I love the term strategic alliance. I find that a very attractive idea. And I have to confess to you, even when we've entered into something that we've characterized as a strategic alliance, it hasn't always met up with my vision of what I thought this was going to look like. So is there some discipline, some structure, some rigor, some do's and don'ts around all this that you help guide them through in setting this up?
Well, there are some questions you probably ought to ask yourself when you're considering a new partnership. And you ought to go into it with your eyes open, I guess is what I would say. The most obvious ones is there a good fit? Does this partnership support the strategy that I'm looking for? Many times companies don't really make sure there's a good partnership. It's like a marriage. You've got to have a partner who you think you can go forever with. Another question to ask is, does it fit our image? Is this company a good fit for us in terms of the customers and the image that we're looking for in the market? The most important question is, can I create a win-win for both parties? Because for a good strategic partnership or strategic alliance to work, both companies have to feel like they're winning and they have to feel like this is right for them. If one partner feels like they're winning and the other doesn't, it's not going to work.
Now, is there a way to test that without actually, you know, forming the partnership? Like a lot of times these things sound good on paper or it looks like we're aligned, but you don't know anything until you actually start engaging in at least a pilot of some kind.
But there's a couple ways to test it. I'll give you an example. When Starbucks aligned with Barnes & Noble, mm-hmm. the original partnership was tested in a few markets. They stuck some Starbucks in a few Barnes & Noble locations. And they were not only looking to see how the marketplace received coffee shops within a bookstore, but they were also looking at how the cultures fit together.
Right.
As time went on, it got to be a much bigger, more significant partnership.
But they tested it by actually putting a Starbucks in the thing. They didn't test it by whiteboarding out, should a Starbucks be in it.
They threw their hat over the fence a little bit, right?
But you ask a great question. Another thing we advocate when we work with clients is you want to avoid making a lot of long-term commitments. So, for example, we're working on now with this financial company. When we went and found partners, we laid out the vision for these potential partners. We laid out where we were going to go very honestly, but we didn't make long-term commitments in terms of what we were going to spend to drive customers their way. We didn't guarantee them any long-term revenue. We said, we're in this together. We're going to learn together as we go. We're going to both commit. You're going to do what you do well. We're going to do what we do well, and we're going to see if we can make this work. And a great
But you committed for like 90 days, or you don't commit for a year or 2 years, right? You got to test it.
You may formalize an agreement, but you always want to have an out. Mm-hmm. If it's not working well, you don't want to be in it forever. It's like you don't want to get married if you're not fully convinced this is the right partner.
Sounds like there could be some scar tissue there. What is your backstory? Have you always been involved in this kind of work?
I came up through big Fortune 100 companies, and I've done a lot of strategic alliance work. I was head of global strategic alliances for Walt Disney Television, which was their syndicated and network divisions. I was head of strategic alliance for Citigroup Worldwide, which is the biggest financial services firm in the world. And I was out basically not only bringing best practice approaches, but helping to negotiate and put these kind of deals in place. So I've done it for several companies. For Turner Broadcasting, I was the chief marketing officer. I did several big deals there. So I've had a lot of experience personally, and frankly, we weren't doing as much of it in our consulting business until the last couple of years. Didn't know that there was as much need for consulting assistance, as we found that there actually is. It's a great strategy for growth and a great way to grow without acquiring the company. Now, equity investments have a whole different flavor than a strategic partnership.
Right. Now, it sounds like that this has become a core part of your business now, or at least you're emphasizing this part of your business now?
It is a product. We have a product that we offer called Partner Track, which is a hands-on assistance program working with the company, everything from developing the strategy for the alliance, identifying the initial potential types of partners that make sense, getting into the outreach itself. When we put the deal together with those five companies, we started with 80 potential companies,
wow,
whittled it down to five, and then finally did deals. So with us, Partner Track is a hands-on approach all the way through negotiation, vetting of the partners, deal points development of what are the deals, what are the requirements on both sides of the house, and then finally the contract and the integration of the partners to kick it off and make it work.
Now, are there some industries or business verticals that are more kind of appropriate for this type of Partner Track program?
Not really. It can work in any industry. We do a lot of work in financial services with this kind of thing. It works very well in healthcare. It works very well in consumer products. It can work in retail with the Barnes & Noble Starbucks example. Strategic partnerships done well can work very well. In the airline business, there are code sharing agreements and things like this. Delta's alliances with KLM and companies Alaska Air, they're basically strategic alliances where they basically share resources and they combine forces to generate win-win situations.
Now, there's the front end of the deal, and obviously the communication expectations need to be set and need to be clear. I would think clarity is paramount here. But then there's the honeymoon, and then we're living together now. So are there some disciplines that are important in that regard as the relationship continues to unfold? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, absolutely. The biggest reason that strategic partnerships fail is lack of commitment at the top. Good partnerships have to have commitment from senior management, and it has to be meaningful, continued commitment. Not, we'll do the deal, we'll celebrate it, we'll put out a press release, and we'll push it down to the mid-level of the organization, and it will likely not survive. So it needs commitment from the top. Product fit is key. Financial fit, do we have a revenue share arrangement? Do we have a split in terms of how we're going to deal with customers? Systems integration, particularly in technology and many of these verticals, you've got to have systems integration. For example, the financial services example I talked about, our client is basically the brand, but the partners are actually closing these new relationships with customers. So they're handing off those relationships to a third party who has to be vetted. They have to be able to explain what the business model is. They have to treat customers properly. They have to do everything that they would do for themselves for this new partnership.
Well, and as the customer, that needs to be pretty seamless and smooth, exactly, or I'm going to walk, right? I don't want to get handed off to five
exactly
different people.
And I don't want to feel like I'm being handed off. I want to feel that it's a warm transfer. So when I answer the phone as a partner, I answer the phone just as I would if I was part of the company. And so there's a training aspect. We've got to train them on who we are. They've got to train us on really what they are, because we got to talk about our partners' products. They've got to talk about our brand. So it's a real partnership, not only in systems and in training. Then there's data security. If I'm bringing you new leads and I'm paying to drive those leads, I don't want those leads being used to compete with me. So what we call Chinese walls have to be established that protects the data from being used in a way that's not intended. So there's a lot of negotiation around that, non-competition, non-compete type clauses, so that both partners understand that, for example, when a financial services becomes a provider to another firm, they may have other businesses they own that really compete with the strategic alliance partner. So you got to keep that data away from those sister divisions. Keep it clean.
Now, how do you go about negotiating the financial split on behalf of your client?
Well, again, you start off with, who's doing what? What's the commitment? Where are the expenses in the relationship? And then what's a reasonable share? Mm-hmm. So it depends on the business. It depends on the situation. If there is revenue to be generated, some strategic partnerships, it's not a revenue situation. In my Disney days, we did a lot of deals for exposure. We were looking to get exposure for Disney television properties outside of television. Mm-hmm. So we did a $60 million alliance with Kellogg Cereal, where we allowed them to use Disney animated characters and storylines and parts of our shows in their commercials in exchange for exposure on the box, in exchange for exposures in their advertising. So it was really a, how do I get exposure from my brand outside of my core channel? And there was no cash. There was no new business generated. And the financial services example I gave, there's new customers coming in, there's new revenue to be shared. So there's definitely a real opportunity there.
Now, when you're negotiating financially, are you negotiating for like the short term and the long term, like the lifetime value of the customer, or are you just, go ahead.
No, you're right. There's an initial opportunity, obviously, but then there's also this lifetime value using upsell and cross sell. You'd like one customer to come in and become a customer for two or three of your products. So you got to sort of negotiate who's allowed to do the follow-up. And in the case I used with the financial services example, there the partner is really only able to sell the product that we've aligned with them to sell. Other add-on sales will come from our, you know, from the initial brand that's selling multiple products. So it gets a little tricky, but if you're actively involved, if you've developed a team, if you've got dedicated management that's focused on the alliance, it can work.
Now, do you find that most companies... they just, you know, they have their way of selling. This is how we've always sold. We've never, you know, kind of entrusted sales in this manner with these third parties, and that you have to really kind of take a leap of faith that this is going to work, as you say, and you're having to spend a lot of your time kind of making them feel comfortable with this type of strategy.
I think the answer is yes, they're used to selling the way they are to the people that they're used to selling to. But more importantly, I think your question prompts a different comment, which is, strategic alliances are not about teaching people how to sell differently. They're about strategic business growing and business developing relationships that are typically not developed by salespeople. They're developed by strategic or marketing people who are thinking, or senior management who are thinking about strategic reasons to grow the business. Salespeople tend to be more transactional. They're closing deals. They're getting commissions. That's not what alliances are about. Alliances are about business growth and transformation. And I think that's a very different skill set than you typically find in salespeople.
Well, this whole approach strikes me as something that can move the needle in your business in a big way and in a hurry if you do it properly. How does the sales and marketing thing for your business work? Is your phone ringing, or are you out trying to have this conversation with executives, or are you doing it also through alliances?
Well, the way we... would have this discussion is we'll talk to companies about their challenges. We'll do a good job of assessing strategic needs. If we're smart, we're asking strategic questions. We're trying to uncover their business issues. From there, it may in fact lead to a discussion around potential partnerships, a way to transform a business. Another way it can happen is if we're working with an existing client. For example, we worked with a bank who was wanting to grow their footprint, but they were regulatorily limited from opening branches. So they needed a way to grow their business without opening branches. Well, we put them together with NCR to develop the first in the country virtual banking kiosk. It's actually a company called Brand Bank in here in the Gwinnett County area. And they launched Brand Express, which is a network of virtual brand experiences. They're kiosks with two-way interactive experience. There's no live person there. You totally talk to somebody on a screen. They know all about you when you put your ATM card in. They can do everything that is done in a real bank. And by putting a community bank in the Southeast together with a major brand that had the technology, by the way, had never gone national with that technology, they were just testing it, we were able to become the first bank in the country to deploy these, you know, basically humanless, if you will. They're not really human because the person's on the screen,
right.
But they're not manned. They're interactive, fully functional banking experiences, basically taking place through two-way video conference, if you will, live, real time.
So what's your favorite part? What do you enjoy the most about this work? Because I can tell you enjoy it.
I think it's creativity. It's fun. It's fun to create new things.
Yeah.
It's fun to transform businesses. It's, you know, there's so few opportunities in today's world to do that, that when we finally get a chance to do that with a client who's willing to take a chance, who's willing to think outside the box, we get excited about that kind of thing. Not everybody is. A lot of companies are blocking and tackling and making the quarterly numbers, and they don't take the blinders off. They don't go very far outside the lines. So to think about things like business transformation through strategic partnership, it takes some creativity, and I enjoy that.
Now, what was it like when you came to that company you work with and you said there's 80 potential partners? You know, that must seem shocking to them that there were 80 places that they can go to tap to generate revenue, and then you go, we're going to now narrow it down to 5.
Right.
I mean, the 80 must have blown them away to begin with.
Well, first of all, to be honest, while they were very supportive of this transformation strategy, what we're trying to do, they never believed we'd ever find a partner.
Right.
Because they were not a well-known company in the space.
Right.
And they never thought anybody would partner with them. But the magic of this is creating the vision and looking as professional and polished as you can. Mm-hmm. So when we walked into those partnerships, we laid out the proposition. It was polished. It was professional. It was well thought out. What was in it for the partner was articulated. What our vision was articulated. And you would never know. They called it the set. They called it a set. They thought it was all contrived. They never believed we'd find a partner. Not only did we find a partner, but the partners are big name companies who fell all over themselves to be part of this proposition. And they did it because they saw the business opportunity. Everybody likes getting customers without spending a lot of money to find them.
Sure.
Everybody likes finding new ways to utilize their capacity. Many technology companies have lots of capacity. They'd love to have more customers coming in and utilizing that. So by understanding what the partner's need is, you can create a proposition that gets companies excited about it, as long as you put yourself on both sides of the desk, your client side, your business side, as well as what's in it for the partners. How are they going to win from this?
Now, it sounds like you make it seem like, hey, this is kind of easy, that there's a lot of opportunity out here, but I would imagine that it's much more strategic and complicated to execute this in an efficient manner.
You have to have the right situation. You have to have the right business opportunity. The alliance has to make sense. You have to think through all the pieces and parts, and there's no guarantee that you'll always be successful. I will say, I'm happy to say that I'm thinking back if there have ever been any I've worked on that were not, they tend to have been successful in one regard, at least putting the deals together and generating the initial results.
All right, but without the benefit of expert counsel from like a firm like yours, now I've got a new job. Now I'm out trying to find the 80 and I'm taking resources.
And not only do I have to find the 80, I got to figure out what's in it for them.
Right. And then I got to get it whittled down.
And then I got to produce this kind of materials that entice them to even have this conversation.
Well, not only that, you got to understand the steps. And if you don't understand the steps to take, the steps are pretty universal. Generally speaking, they're the same steps, but you do have to understand how to deploy those steps. So
what are the steps? So save us all some time.
So for example, step number one, we develop a strategy. What is the partnership strategy? What are the goals? What are the benefits that
but
we
it's
expect?
Not just my goals. It's what is the partner's goals? Yeah. I have to kind of wear both hats when I'm creating this, right?
That's right. What's in it for us? What's in it for a partner? How are we going to win together? That's the strategy. Second step is researching those partners. So defining the feature functionality, the things that partners need to be able to provide us.
Are the partners sometimes like kind of not where you would think they are? Like how outside of the box you have to think about partnerships, or are they just the obvious people in your industry?
Well, it would depend. If you're looking for, if you're looking for specific product partners, they have to have certain products. The products have to meet certain criteria. If you're looking for exposure, like an entertainment alliance, there they need to have a lot of stores. They have a lot of visibility. We're looking for off-channel, like the Disney example. Just depends on the strategy behind the partnership.
But I like this idea of having fresh eyes look at it. So like if we were to pursue this as a radio network, right?
Right.
We've got our own kind of frame
bias,
of reference.
Right.
You bring a guy in here that's done all these deals and thinks this way every day, he's going to see things from a vantage point we would never get to, I think.
Right. And the other thing, and I think this is universal around management consulting in general, the biggest advantage that a good management consultant will bring a company is objectivity. The ability to sort of look at a situation from fresh perspective, having worked with other companies and other industries, and say, where are the possibilities? How can I apply something from another industry that worked there in your industry and make it work for you? And that's creativity. And that's kind of the fun stuff that I enjoy doing, is how do we transfer, if you will, learning from one industry to another and transform a business at the same time. But the key to your point is objectivity. And many times when you're fighting day to day, you're not thinking outside that box, not because you're not very intelligent, but because you're just dealing with what you know. Whereas a good consultant will look at things with a fresh perspective and see opportunities you won't see.
Well, you mentioned two of the steps in this, how to develop the partnership. Are there any other steps?
So develop the strategy, research potential partners, figure out the industries, the targets that you want. Number three is the outreach. So you finally have to reach out there and make an initial contact. And I have to tell you, those were 80 companies we talked to. There were a few who didn't even answer the phone. And you would think they would want to have a conversation. They did not respond. So it even amazes me sometimes that some companies still don't take the time to at least have the first discussion with you. So partner outreach is key. You can do that by phone. You can do that by email. And you typically want to do that with a conference call before you fly around the country. The next step is active negotiations. Now we get together, we lay out the proposition, we see if the parties are interested, and then that's sort of a dance that could take months back and forth. The next step after that is sort of active negotiation with deal points. You lay out, here's kind of how the relationship can be structured. And there's usually a lot of pieces to that. There's a lot of elements around that, from the things I talked about, product fit, revenue share, confidentiality and data security, cross-training, co-marketing, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things have to be negotiated. And then contracting. So now we get into a preliminary contracting process. Lawyers get involved. Typically, the champion, the operating executive who's championing the alliance is not a lawyer. We're typically working as well, trying to mitigate issues on both sides and make the deal come together. And then lastly, once we've got a deal in place, we've got to launch it. We've got to put a team together to manage it. And we've got to integrate all the pieces and parts to make it work. So if you think about the processes of these, whether it's a product relationship or it's a promotional marketing alliance or something like this, the steps tend to be very similar.
Now, it seems that your firm has done a great job productizing some of your offerings. Is that a strategy in your business?
Well, you know, our theory was that people were worried about management consultants because it was like a taxi ride. You never knew when the meter was going to stop, and the invoices were going to stop showing up. So we decided to take our skill sets and capabilities and try to use, as you say, productize them into something that has a beginning and end, specific deliverables, and kind of a fixed price. And, strategic partnerships is a capability we've packaged as Partner Track. We've got some other ones that basically are using skill sets in our business, but putting them in very bite-sized pieces that are very easy for people to understand. Consultants can scare people.
And if somebody wants to learn more about your firm and learn more about Partner Track as a website?
Our company is Ascension Growth and Innovation Strategies. We're available at ascensionstrategy.com. That's ASCENSION and the word strategy with a Y.com.
Well, this has been very instructive, very informative, and it kind of got me reignited around this idea of strategic alliances for the work that we do, Lee. So thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, do you have any local clients that you've partner tracked?
Well, as I mentioned, Brand Bank was one that developed Brand Express, the virtual banking tellers. We've got another client I can't mention at the moment.
Would you be open to having them come in and you guys talk about how you work together?
As a matter of fact, I'll talk to them. We may come back and bring maybe one or both of them in. There's two clients locally that are doing alliance work. They may be willing to talk about it.
I like that a lot. Kind of get a 360-degree view right. Of how all
that
unfolded.
Would that be helpful for you?
It would be helpful. You know, there's confidentiality. So as long as they're not, as long as they're willing to do it, I'd love to do it.
I'll check with them. Well, then we'll see about making that happen. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone the Chief Customer Officer with Pipestream, Miss Donna Peoples. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I am doing so well. What a delight to have you back. I bet you've been up to a lot since we saw you last.
Oh, wow. Well,
you can't keep a job, Donna.
I know.
You're always doing interesting things.
I have a millennial mindset. Therefore, I'm a job hopper. But yeah, when I was here last year, I had left AIG as their first Chief Customer Officer and was consulting myself. And what a wild and crazy ride this has been. I now find myself in participating in a startup in the Silicon Alley of New York. And it's a technology company. It's my first foray into technology, but felt like it really solved for felt needs of so many companies that I've worked with in as customers and with consulting. So.
And that company is Pipestream. That's with a Y, obviously.
Correct.
Because we are a technology firm.
That's right.
Can you share a little bit about Pipestream? What are you guys doing for folks?
Yeah, well, let me give you a little backstory. I was actually speaking at a financial services customer experience conference, and I got asked, you know, how sometimes the universe conspires in your favor, sometimes it feels against you, but I got asked to step on and moderate a panel discussion at the last minute. And so the topic was, how does technology either enable or detract from the customer's experience? Mm-hmm. So given
that's
my
right
experience,
your sweet spot,
absolutely.
Right?
So I said, sure, I'll talk to that. Mm-hmm. So there were some big companies like Sprint and EDS on the panel, but there was also a CEO of a company I'd never heard of. And as you guys know, you know, we who have worked in big corporations feel like we've met every vendor on the planet at one point or another. So I'd never heard of Pipestream or the CEO, Richard Smullen. And I had just come off of a very regulated, compliant, heavy operation in AIG. And so I ask a lot of questions from that perspective.
Sure.
So he was able to answer the questions. And 2 weeks later, I went back for a demo. And, you know, we walked off the stage and I said, you are or what this product is. But if it can do what you said it can do, you just made my life a lot easier. And so when I saw it in operation, I knew it was going to be a game changer. And I'll tell you guys, you know, I started advising early in the year. And we, I didn't join until a little bit later, but we applied for our patent March 25th of this year and got it a month ago.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's fast. Which,
and so I became an investor as well. I just fell in love with it and do believe this is a communications platform with transactional capabilities that answers the need for so many corporations that, you know, we've all got smart computers that we're carrying around in our hands or sure. in our pockets. And I don't know about you guys, but I've got two millennial daughters. And if I want to talk to them, they're not picking up the phone. They're not answering their email. They left Facebook a long time ago.
Even
because
if they're
I'm
in
working.
The house with you.
Exactly. I've got to text them. So the mobile messaging and application really appealed to me. You know, and never mind the fact that, you know, we've got 1.6 billion people on messaging now. And I think the last report that I saw was that for 2017, there was about 28.2 trillion messages that are anticipated. Wow. Fastest growing communications platform in our history. And with the universal protocol of phone, but we're web enabled for call center applications, it just was a no-brainer for me. So I always tell people Sheryl Sandberg may lean in, but Donna Peoples leaps in. So I dove right in, and it's been a great, great opportunity.
Now, from a customer experience standpoint, how does a company navigate this texting and this messaging world that is so short and so kind of staccato in the sense it's back and forth in little fragments of sentences even?
Well, exactly. And this is, we do that already. You know, we're communicating now. There's a whole emoji language.
Right. That's not even words.
That's
They're
right.
symbols.
That's right. So, you know, the way to do that is to leverage up that messaging. And the reality, when we go in and we look at transcripts of phone calls mm-hmm. that are taken with customers, they can be really made a lot more efficient and cut down so much. And this is a great opportunity to do it. We've all heard you can't hardly pick up a tech magazine or a customer experience article and not hear about chatbots.
Sure.
The rise of chatbots. So, you know, we like to think about that.
Why don't you define that for the people who aren't familiar with that?
Okay. Well, for us, it's really an intelligent automation of a process. So if you think about a decision tree and keeping that customer on track, because we all read about Tay and we've all seen Siri, and, you know, to have a true AI experience, you better be ready for those questions that come around, like what's the meaning of life or what right. socks should I wear today?
You better have that answer in there
That's
too.
That's right. So this is more of a predictive automation that takes the customer through the process and gets to resolution as quickly as possible.
Is it leveraging machine learning?
It is in the very beginning, but, you know, just like we teach our toddlers growing up, they have to be taught and trained over time. We wouldn't release those on the broader market.
All right, so I want to walk this through a little bit and really see if I can't get my arms around what the application looks like, and maybe we'll touch on a part of Craig's world. Let's say that Lee and I are looking at doing some kind of self-directed, I don't know, IRA or KEO, put away a little bit of money that we're generating from our business. Mm-hmm. And we hear that they're doing a great job at, I don't know, a Raymond James or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so if they were to adopt this, and for all I know they have, could we go in there and have a little bit of interaction with back and forth with your tool?
You
and
could.
Ask just some basic questions. What's the difference in this and that? And how much do I have to give? And what do I need to know? And then...
You
yeah,
certainly could
through that.
Not only could you get information, FAQs are some of the low-hanging fruit that we can go in and automate immediately. So the transactional capabilities come along a little bit later. You know, when you think about wealth advisors, you know, they have been prohibited from advising via text because the messages are uh-huh. stored on the device. It, with Pipestream, it is an encrypted conversation that goes on directly between the customer and the enterprise.
So then it's okay.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it's automatically stored in a file cabinet so that you can always, you know, I come from a very regulated world between energy and financial services. And, you know, one of the things that struck me, chatbots are sexy and fun to talk about, but that automatic storage, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Right?
Yeah. So
being
able to demonstrate and document that you've managed the relationship in the right way and that the data is secure.
Well, I'll tell you what I think I like about this is I like the idea of maybe going and getting some of that information without traditional research, just doing like I would normally do, ask the questions. I'm asking this AI these questions. Then I can come back to Lee and say, hey, I've done a little bit of this stuff and I've asked a few questions here. And then based on this, I think maybe we should reach out and actually talk to Joe over at financial company ABC. But I'm also thinking that maybe Joe at company ABC is now, over the course of a few days of me asking these questions, now he's got me in a different category, right? Like he would score me as, okay, this guy's worth setting up some time to talk to. So
correct.
You work that end of it too?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, let's face it, none of us here get excited about calling a call center. You know, I don't care what the call center is.
Well, I'm not ready for Joe to hammer me on sending him a check just yet either. So there's a comfort level of being able to get that info.
Yeah, and your information, Stone, would be stored. So whenever you did want to talk to Joe, he would know all of the background conversation. So imagine a world where in a call center, you don't ever have to repeat your account number again. Or what happened to you.
Well, you have to do that in the biggest company.
Exactly.
I mean, it has nothing to do with... I mean, that's just relentless. That and it's so frustrating from a consumer standpoint that no one... And is the reason that no one has written it down is because of these compliance issues?
No. The reason is because if you've ever walked through a call center operation, it's not unusual for a rep for what you and I think is a simple question to be answered, might have to pull up 5 to 7 different screens is the average. Because what we've done is we've grown by mergers and acquisitions at these large enterprises.
And they each have their own
version. Yeah. And guess what? None of them speak to each other.
Of course not.
Yeah. So what Pipestream has become, almost unintended, is that we've become a middleware that connects those enterprise systems that are already in operation. We're not about replacing them. We're not about replacing humans either or any other channel. I think we're truly moving into omni-channel. And as you guys can attest, you know, video did not kill the radio star.
Right, exactly.
We are not going to kill email. It's going to be out there, but the response rates continue to diminish. So finding something that's more immediate and real time, I think, is going to be more and more important.
Now, you mentioned a call center, and the way that I envision it, and maybe this is totally wrong, is that I thought that when I'm talking to a call center or to a company, in essence, that they pull up my account. And in my account, it has all of these questions that I've asked and answers that I've, you know, been given over the course of the lifetime with it dealing with this company.
Not necessarily.
But sometimes you're saying that it's kind of like, what was that movie where it's like they forget everything and it's like Dory, right?
Yeah,
like it's like the first conversation. I'm having the first conversation all the time.
Yeah. And customers want to know that you know them.
I just went through this, you know. A year ago, we had the same issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I've already rebooted my thing and I've already, you know, done all of this stuff. And you've had two people come out here since then. And that this was supposed to be fixed a year ago.
Yeah.
So you're saying that a lot of times every conversation is kind of in its own vacuum.
Especially. And, you know, I made a lot of money in consulting going after the lack of elegance in handoffs between departments. So, Lee, when you talk to somebody at your cable company about your bill, it's not the same people all the time that you talk to.
The same person.
No, like, but I mean, even the same departments don't house things.
So they don't share all of that.
Not always.
About my account. That's crazy.
Correct.
Craig wants to jump in here.
I was just going to say, not only that, it's a function of what the rep documents in the CRM system.
Correct.
And if they don't document it, it's not captured normally, right?
That's right. So it never happened. But yeah, that's the basic premise of it. So, you know, it's 24-hour real-time. We found in the call centers, which have been one of our first verticals for quick adoption, you think about, you know, one rep can take one phone call at a time.
Right.
At a bare minimum, what we found is that an average rep can manage 5 chats at a time. So you've got a 5x pickup automatically, plus customer satisfaction scores go up almost instantaneously. You layer on top of that the ability to automate and get to resolution faster, because people don't generally call them up to say, you're doing a great job, just wanted to say hello. Then, you know, that's even icing on the cake there.
Now, is this service something that you have to be a large company to benefit from, or is this available to smaller size companies as well?
I'm so glad you asked that. You know, when we were first getting started, we turned, as part of the soft launch, the ability to go online and sign up as a freemium model, as a SaaS company. We have right now 13,000 small and medium businesses that are on our platform communicating with their customers via Pipestream Messenger. Mm-hmm. So transactional capabilities for small and medium businesses aren't like those with enterprises. You know, Joe's pool service may want the ability to calendar a pool checkup, but he may or may not want the ability to send a bill or receive a payment online. So it's a cafeteria plan that we offer for small and medium. It got so big so quickly, though, we turned that off because as a business strategy, we felt like we needed to focus more on the enterprise customers. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what we're doing now. We're in the process of doing some integrations. Our first enterprise business was a large utility company in the Mid-Atlantic region. So not the likely first adopters when right. you think about fast-moving really. Innovators. But
they'd like to be first.
Yes, right.
Now, so the first part of your process is to kind of get all that brain dump of what are the most common things that people are asking and get that big pile of easy, low-hanging fruit answers, right? And then correct. You got to throw in the snarky ones, right? This,
the escalations.
Right.
Well, hold on just a minute. You do that or that's on us if we buy the service, or does that depend on the level of service that we...
Well, it depends on the enterprise. You know, I'm always surprised, but shouldn't be anymore, that some enterprise customers, even the really big ones that have brand recognition, don't always even have something like a process map, or they've designed their processes to solve a business problem instead of thinking about the impact to the customer. Mm-hmm. So many times we'll have to go back in and work them through the process of getting to the right answer. Mm-hmm. And so many times it's more about increasing efficiency and speed to resolution for those kind of things.
Now, your background is customer experience, and that's kind of in your heart, right?
Yes.
Now, there has to be an elegance about all this in order for the person to use it. And is that your role in the organization, is to kind of be that you're the heart?
Yeah, I kind of think of myself as representing everything from awareness, you know, by right. the customer. We're not recognized as a brand. So, you know, we're in the process
sure.
of, you know, setting all those things up, but all the way through to what we hope will be true advocacy from the customer. Mm-hmm. So it is that customer journey in a fulsome way that I'm in a position to influence.
And then, I'm sure when you started in customer experience, you didn't think like one day I'll be doing this for a chatbot, right?
No. You know,
right? You thought relationship with customers were human to human.
That's right.
And it's changing so rapidly now.
Well, yeah, it is. And it's ironic in a way that, you know, we talk about, you know, I remember the first segmentations, given my age away a little bit, you know, it was about consumer or commercial. You know, right. two big silos. And then, you know, we moved into more customization, ultimately personalization. And now with the abilities that technology brings us to digitize those relationships, it's ironic that a chatbot could make it more human.
Right.
Because if you sat through call centers mm-hmm. and they're, you know, confined to reading scripts, they're almost acting like a robot anyway.
And especially if they're not having a good day. And
that's right.
You know, they have their own agenda.
Chatbot never flies off the handle, right?
That's right. Call in sick. Chatbot keeps its cool.
Right.
That's right.
They're not getting fired up about something.
Yeah. Like yeah. And it's consistent. You know, right. I mean, have you, you know, just taking airlines as an example. I spend a lot of time up in the air. And, you know, I had rather have a consistently good experience than have one that is terrible and then brilliant.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that way you know what to expect. And but so I think consistency is
But important. Is it possible, because we were talking about this earlier, the surprise and delight element, can you still incorporate some of that in a chatbot?
You can. And some of the bots that we're creating actually take on the brand personality. But here's the deal. You know, as good as your experience is when you go to the dentist, no matter how comfortable that chair is, no matter how many TVs or multimedia they put, or how new the magazines are, it's still the dentist.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, understanding delight in the context of what the sure. business resolution is, I think, is important. And setting those standards. We talk about, you know, how I think we talked about it last time that, you know, none of us as brands has the luxury of living in our own verticals protected and right. dealing with the competitors as we thought we knew them. Now we live on this horizontal where, you know, everybody wants to access and analyze Google data. Everybody wants the distribution network right. of Amazon. Everybody wants the community of Facebook and the brand of Apple. You know, is a utility company going to try to be the next Amazon? Probably not. It's knowing where you fit in that continuum and then designing a custom solution to meet those expectations, first of your customer.
Well, and it seems to me like the chatbot can be a marvelous trigger for a human implementing surprise and delight. Where this is coming from, really, literally, before we went on air, the three of us were talking about some surprise and delight strategies. Yeah. For guests and clients of Business Radio X. And we came up with a whole list, and we're going to continue to try to brainstorm and innovate around that. But what I'm thinking is if there were a layer before that that let us know when and where to apply surprise and delight, then that person that's managing the 5X can say, okay, this is the one I'm about to use surprise and delight strategy number 4 on this one and blow their socks off because of what's happened in the chat, right?
Yes, because they've laid the groundwork.
Right.
Beautiful. And we use natural language processing so that if you're going in and having a conversation with a chatbot and the chatbot picks up on like all capital letters or a 4-letter right. word.
Might be angry. Or might be mad.
An angry emoji.
That one goes to Ryan.
Yeah.
Get to a human quickly.
It'll automatically kick it out and you can toggle, you know, effortlessly between a person who handles those sort right. of escalations yeah. or a chatbot. You hit it.
And the customer may not even know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of our chatbots have quite a bit of personality.
So go-to-market strategy for you guys, obviously you're getting the word out and you're having these conversations. Do you have like a dedicated sales force out there beating the bushes?
I know somebody. If you want to do some strategic alliances,
yeah. I know somebody, Craig.
Yeah. Connected with somebody.
Exactly. Well, that's it was a great time to have Craig and I on together because number one, you're looking at one of the salespeople. And so, so I'm out there talking to customers and regulators and partners a lot. But we've really decided to really more finely hone our focus on those poster children for difficult customer experiences. Uh-huh. So it is...
So you're going right in the deep end, huh?
Absolutely. And wow. So it's, you know, utility companies, it's airlines, it's cable companies and wow. telecoms providers.
Man.
It's insurance and financial
Man,
services.
You are brave.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the pain is.
Right?
That's right. And, you know, I've been so amazed because while I said earlier, these folks aren't usually... considered first adopters, I think they get it because
it's the most urgent need for them.
The world is changing too. Right. You know, there's disruptors out there who are just ready to come in
sure.
and take the market and can do it with much greater speed than some of the legacy organizations. So that partnering has been amazing to me to see that, you know, come about.
Now, if somebody wants to learn more about Pipestream.
Yeah, please visit us at Pipestream. That's with a Y. PYPESTREAM.com, or you can download our app off the Google or Android store and
so
start
you can
using
kind of
us
play
today.
Around with it
yeah,
right
you
away,
can
right?
pipe us. Yeah,
pipe us. That's yeah. that's a verb.
Yeah, it is now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Stone. Good to see you, Craig.
Same here.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our producer Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.